Welcome to Modcast, a Civilization podcast focused on game modding. Welcome to Modcast 81. It's Saturday, the 23rd of February 2019. This is the first Modcast of 2019. I'm Rob 8XFT, and with me today are...
I'm Jan, hello.
Lee S.
Narai the Forgiven.
The Crazy Scatsman.
Okay, welcome everybody. Jan, you may know as well as JNR13 on the forums. If anybody wonders who Jan actually is, he is one of the modders of Civ 6 that's been on Civ Fanatics and Steam recently. So, welcome to 2019. We've got Gathering Storm out now. With potentially some new things that have changed in terms of modding. A couple of the things that are visible straight away are the compatibility mode, where you've got to tag the mod as compatible with Gathering Storm. And the other thing is something that's called the jersey system, where there's like a colour system where you can assign up to 4 sets of colours for each civ, and it automatically creates the icon rather than you needing to provide the 45 size icon these days. So is that a positive move, do you think, for those two things?
Compatibility mode, I really love it, just because I'm running so many mods, right? And when Rise and Fall came out, it was the worst thing. You know, so this is maybe come from a player perspective as opposed to a modder perspective. You know, when Rise and Fall came out, everyone was updating their mods, but I couldn't tell. Some mods were modders were doing it faster, slower. I couldn't tell which mods were and weren't up to date. So, you know, for a period of time, I just kind of had to not play with mods, because even upstanding outfits like JFD or Supertact were all, you know, it was all questionable whether or not you could run the mod at any one given time. So the added visibility is just amazing.
Yeah, well, I can't really say anything about the compatibility since I just came back to the 6, but what I noticed about it is, from a user perspective, I think that when you set the compatibility tag, then the mod automatically activates the next time you boot up the game. And I think that has been confusing some people. So, yeah, I think a default setting is no automatic activation would help. Because, yeah, I've gotten messages from people who had error messages and whatever, and it turned out that mods had activated, which got updated, but they hadn't actually set them as active again. And so, yeah.
Yeah, that's actually been part of Civ 6 since Vanilla was released. And it's completely different than the way Civ 5 worked. And that gets people all the time, because if you update your mod and then upload it to Steam, it automatically downloads to everybody who's connected to Steam, and that download automatically enables the mod, which to me is not a good idea.
What's also weird to me too, because this was my experience for the last week playing Gathering Storm, was that if a mod is, I don't know exactly how it's determined, but some of my mods, when they're activating, they're actually activating in existing games. So I don't know if it's checking the quote-unquote effect save games tag, but here I am playing vanilla unmodded Gathering Storm on day one. I just want to experience it unaltered, right? And day two, I reopened my save game, and all of a sudden, some of my UI has changed, and I have no idea why.
Yeah.
And it turns out, yes, well, you know, I think it was the mod, kind of like Real Tech Tree or something like that, which adds a whole bunch of additional icons and stuff into your tech tree. The mod author had gone and got it up and running for Gathering Storm, flagged it as compatible. It was now loading into my supposedly vanilla game. I hadn't gone and turned it on. I hadn't had it on when I started the game, so it was just this kind of shock, like, did somebody break the, you know, did somebody give me a mod that just broke the, sort of the sandboxing around mods, or what's going on? And then I realized that it had activated itself.
Yeah, that's an issue that has kind of niggled at me since the release of Civ 6 as well, and one of the things that I've found that was helpful, I don't know if any of you guys used the mod Enhanced Mod Manager by Final Freak on Steam. That one's really nice because it just makes it so much easier to activate and deactivate mods. It still doesn't, I don't know that it's possible to change the default behavior of mods being active, but at least this one allows you to like select multiple mods at the same time, enable them, disable them. You can just right click to disable a mod, so you don't have to go in there and click disable mod. Like, it's just, I've found that to be very helpful, especially as I've been doing testing on my own mods.
Yeah,
actually, I haven't started using that mod yet, but I was actually recommended it by Sucrit, which is very interesting because he has a competing mod manager mod, and he said, hey, you should use this one, which is pretty high praise coming from Sucrit.
Yeah, I saw that he actually deprecated his own mod in favor of it, so I found that to be very high praise, and that led me to try it out, and really good.
So with the Jersey system then, we recognize this thing that we had with Civ 5, which was because that particular point there was only one leader per Civ, people were creating different Civs with different leaders that were really the same Civ, if you know what I mean. So the hash so-and-so's Winston Churchill's England, as well as Elizabeth's England and Victoria's England, and all different colours, and we ran out of colours almost. We had a real problem with it. So I think Braxis has kind of recognised that and have this system now in place where you can nominate up to four sets of colours for each civilization, and it's meant to sort of recognize if there are any clashes and default back to one of the reserve ones instead of the one that was originally going to show. I understand that the user, as in the human player, whatever he chooses as the, you know, the civ gets their first choice colours, and it's the AI civs that sort of default to the other ones. I'm not quite sure what happens in multiplayer, but probably the first player on.
In multiplayer, you actually can, what happens is, when, let's say you've all loaded in, there's four of you, you can actually choose which colour you want to have, option of four. But what will also happen, although I believe you can just keep going anyhow, is that if more than one person has a similar color, a judge too similar, you will get a little, I think it's a little red exclamation mark by your color to say that you mouse over and it says, you know, hey, you're pretty darn close to Dido right now. Do you want to consider choosing a different color? So it's, for multiplayer, it's more up to you. And you do actually, I think, have to manually change them. I don't think it's going to just shift them, even for the AI players. If you have AI players, you're still going to have to choose from the drop-down what color you want them to be.
Okay, but that's in player, right?
But not, yeah, that's only in multiplayer. And I know that, I think it's Sucrit actually has created a mod recently, or is working on a mod. I don't quite remember. Yes. He and I are talking a lot these days. He's showing me cool stuff he's working on. But I think he's working on one that lets you do that same sort of behavior in single player. Kind of nice.
Yeah.
Because, like, I think that the idea of being able to shift between four colors is great. But I feel like the biggest problem with it is how opaque it is. You just load in and suddenly Germans are green. I don't know if Germans can be green, but you get the point, right? You just don't know anymore. And some people like that. I've heard some comments from people saying, you know, it's great not knowing immediately when you see a civilization, oh, it's just another German civ. Is this Germany? Is this Australia?
Cool. Yeah, I think what I'm doing with my own civs is those that are going to have compatibility with the four Jersey system, because you don't have to have. It's your choice. You know, when you do the mod, just one will still work. But is to have three colours at all, you know, for each civ and just sort of mix around those colours. I think that's what generally people are doing, rather than having four completely different sets of colours for the civilizations, just to make it still relevant, because otherwise you'll end up with things like green for Germany. So Germany could have, for example, black, gold, and red, and the different. There's more than four different combinations of those three colours, first and second. So that's kind of how that works.
I mean, especially when you look at Germany, I think it's a good example for what you can do, because the colours change throughout history, right? Mm. So of course you could already do it for alternative leaders. That, let's say, you had Bismarck as red, white, and black, and I don't know, Merkel as red, orange, and black. But yeah. with the Jersey system, you can kind of make those as backups for each other.
Yeah.
And so instead of having just inverse colors of the ones, you can just look to different time periods and maybe take something that's familiar, but not the same.
It also helps when you're probably not convinced by some of the colors that Fraxis have chosen for the first colors, probably because the ones they would have liked to have chosen have already been taken. Georgia being the number one in my mind for that, having the white and orange were really, you know, white and red, please, but that's already been taken by Japan. So obviously it gives that opportunity for those civs to have what you might say in inverted commas is a real colours. for them. But
yeah, actually, that's one of the things, I'm glad you brought that up, Rob. That's one of the things that I was slightly disappointed with the jersey system. Although maybe it would have been too confusing to roll out and say, okay, you know, now we're going to do this. But it's things like, you know, how come the default of Japan is not white and red like it is right now, but also Georgia, white and red. Just give me two civs with their default color being the same color, or not really the same color. It'd be a different shade of red, but close enough that you would want the jersey system to shove one or the two outside. But if you're not in a game with Japan and Georgia, then why is Georgia, Canada, Japan not all kind of sitting in the same spot, right?
Correct. I think it would be a perfect thing for them to show off the jersey system with, because they can say, look, this is how it operates. When Canada's on its own as a civ, then it's the red, red, and white. But if Japan's there as well, Japan's being played by the player, then, you know, Canada might be a different colour. Or Japan might be a different colour and Canada stay the same. And Georgia then achieve something else for. It could be any, you know, any of those sort of combinations. And, yeah, it would be good to see that. It'd be a good example anyway of how the jersey system works, and maybe they could have, but then again, I suppose once you've established the colour for the nation, maybe it was difficult to change that. I don't know.
I think it will also just take a while until players get used to it. So yeah. Right now we're seeing posts, oh, I saw green America or blue Georgia, whatever. And once people kind of get used to, you know, not associating one colour with one civ and nothing else around that,
yeah,
then people might become a lot more tolerant also to just having different colors in their game, and we can see kind of how to create a system or how to be more systematic about adding colors to civs.
I agree with what we're thinking when Civ first came out, or Civ 6 first came out, and we were having these modcasts at that time, was that perhaps each country could have had a color rather than each leader, if that makes sense, because we were concerned that they were going to, in inverted commas, run out of colors, certainly with the way the modding took off. But probably this is the way to kind of get rid of that. I don't know.
Well, at least we won't have the modding wars about who can have green and orange.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, that is one of the things that was always a pain. I used to complain on previous modcasts that the hardest step of modding was the negotiation process to determine whether or not I could use my color. So now at least there's a precedence that says, well, okay, I shouldn't use the same four colors that you use, that's for sure. But, you know, color combinations. But with a set of eight combinations to work with, you know, don't get mad at me if I have some colors that are the same as yours. Just, you know, so it's easier. I can come down, sit down and make up a swath of four colors. And
yeah. What would be happy as well within the color system is within, if you're doing a larger mod, which has several civilizations in it, if you could...
Who would do something like that?
Well,
I don't... just got hit run over by a Segway there.
Absolutely, but it would be nice to see if it could also be given some sort of a priority system. So it would say, hey, hang on a minute, whatever happens, England's always going to be red. I don't care. That's going to have the priority.
Sounds like something only a British person would want.
Well, it could be, but that could be for England. But you know what I'm saying.
Yep.
So it could
be. Well, wait. You know, the United States is red, white, and blue, so I want red.
Yeah, well, indeed. But what I'm trying to say to you is that when you do those civilizations, there's some civs that are very much tied to one color. I mean, orange for the Dutch, for example. And there's other civs, like Zulu, it doesn't really kind of matter what color it is, in a sense. There aren't any colors that you would automatically associate with them. So whatever colors... Well, yeah, but you know what I mean, don't you?
Well, the problem is that probably all countries where people would care about being a high priority will all have some sort of red and white in them, or yeah, sometimes blue. Like, nobody's going to fight for green, but yeah, people will fight for red.
The Irish would definitely fight for green.
Yeah, I was going to say as well, when you come over here, oh, I'm in Canada, right, and you look at our First Nations, Canada and in the United States with the Native Americans, there's a whole whack of them, probably a good 80 to 85%, where there is like a sacred color wheel of black, yellow, red, white.
Yeah.
And so when you go to almost every First Nations and you say, you know, what is the colors that define you? They're going to say, oh, it's these four. But for every single one. So if you're in my position when I was in Civ 5, 5 and I was doing Colonialist Legacies with all the Native Americans and the First Nations, you know, you'd go to the next Civ over and you would say, oh, it's the same color scheme. It's the same color scheme every time. And so from there, you just have to throw it out. You have to say, well, you know, we're making the DNA blue and green, and we're making, especially because, of course, in Civ 5, all of those colors were already taken anyway.
Yeah, that sort of thing. All I'm saying is that if the mod maker of such a mod were to be able to set that thing, that good. Because it wouldn't necessarily, in that particular case, I mean, what I'm thinking particularly of are subs like Sparta, which you can only really imagine being specific colours, and there are some others, and the Dutch, more modern-wise, you can only really, orange really goes with them, and it'd be a shame for somebody to, like Georgia, to take over the orange, when actually orange isn't really their colour. So, you know, some sort of prioritisation for that. If possible, if you can mod it in, it would be nice, but there you go, point of view.
Yeah, and actually, I'm slightly disappointed, although I totally understand why, that in a single-player game, it is always the single-player, first player, is given priority, and everything else gets shoved out of their way, instead of it being kind of balanced for maybe minimum impact around the, say, 10 liters you've got, or 6 liters you've got. It doesn't say, okay, I'm just going to look at this and say, oh, it's all good, except if I just move, you know, player 5, and then everything will be okay. It's going to say, no, player 1 must be precedence, and then it cascade out and have more of an effect depending on what you have. I wouldn't mind coming into a game and realizing that, oh, I'm orange today. It's always, no, I must stay the same color.
On the other hand, that then might tell you who else is in the game, right? So if there isn't much orange, but if, let's say, if you spawn as Georgia, and we already said that the Netherlands should always take orange because that's their color and nobody else kind of reveres that color so highly, and you spawn and you're just back to some, I don't know, some random stuff, maybe not even red, then you kind of know that the Netherlands are already in the game, which isn't that big of a deal on big maps with many civs, but if you're playing on a small map, maybe just 4 civs, and you can deduct that one of them is the Zulu, that will probably impact how you
walls,
play, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hurry up and build more units and more walls, because
you might not even send out a settler, scout or something.
You're right. It's true. Especially with the Zulu.
Yeah, well, especially in Civ 5, I remember if you ran into Zulu at certain parts of the game, it's like, okay, the whole strategy has to change. We have to go become a warmonger because we're not going to have any choice. Otherwise, yeah, we're going to create an impi spam. And there are some players in Civ 6 that are a little like that, although Civ 6 is still kind of weak on giving a good war.
Try look at Suleiman. I think he's going to be the big warmonger, personally.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with you on that as well, you know, on the question of the perennial question of the AI, although, which is just that I feel like the AI is actually better in Gathering Storm by a fair bit at winning the game by any means other than war, but it's still maybe a little weak when it comes to war, says the guy who can't win a warmongering game to save his life.
Yeah. It always seems to me when I play that each of the other civs specialise in each of the different possible ways of winning, and I'd better watch out and make sure that I am Mr. Average at least on everything, otherwise, you know, all of a sudden someone's going to defeat me on culture or on religion or whatever. It always seems to be the case when I play, but then again, I'm not the best player. If we can move on then, just talking about the modifier attachment system that you're looking at, Lee. Can you tell us a bit more about that, please?
Well, with Gathering Storm, we can, through Lua, we can attach modifiers directly to cities and players. We can't do it with units yet, which is unfortunate, especially since when units, they get upgraded, they lose all the modifiers that were attached from being trained within a given city. So if you're building, say, a stable in City X and pumping out horse-type units, and then you go and you upgrade all those units, well, you lose all your modifiers that came from there being a stable in that city.
Uh-huh.
Because those units are no longer considered to be trained in that city.
Sounds like a bug.
I have a...
Well, it's been there since vanilla.
I have a game right now where Matterhorn is only accessible from one side through a series of hills, and I think that promotion also disappears, right?
Yeah,
so it's a real hassle to always send your units back there to get them the promotion back after every upgrade.
Yeah, I think that is also the case with the Royal Navy dockyard with England, because there aren't the naval units supposed to get an extra movement, and I don't think that's maintained when they're upgraded.
Right. basically what happens is all those modifiers that come from Dockyard, Barracks, Stable, they're all, if you look at the modifier setup, they're all city-trained units is the collection. Well, when you upgrade, that city is not training the unit, because what happens is the game wipes the old unit off the map and puts a new unit in its place.
And it doesn't have some...
And that new unit isn't considered as being trained in the same city as the old one was, because you can upgrade wherever. And even if you bring your unit back to the city and upgrade, I don't think you keep the modifier.
Wow.
So that's a sad part of what Phyrexis implemented with being able to attach modifiers, is that you can't do it for units. So like the way we did in Civ 5, where we would create all these crazy promotions and add them and remove them as some other trigger occurred through Lua, we can't do that yet with units. We can do it with players and cities, but the command is only attach a modifier. It's not unattach a modifier. So what we can do, if we're careful and clever, is we can create one modifier that adds X and another modifier that's its exact logical or numerical opposite, and then we can turn that on and off by attach the modifier that adds it, and then later on attach the modifier that is its direct opposite. But then you have to kind of keep track of how many times you shut the same one on and off, because if you give it the anti one before you give it the positive one, then you're out of sequence.
That's bad news.
So how are promotions treated differently? Because obviously when you upgrade a unit, it maintains the promotions. And how is that system different?
Well, that's all buried in DLL. Mm. We don't really know, but its promotions are based basically on promotion class. And since when you upgrade, you stay within the promotion class, apparently the DLL says to itself, hey, the new unit is going to be the same promotion class, so let's keep all the promotions.
Bad news for me.
Whereas with abilities, it doesn't apparently look at, well, I think it does look at abilities that have been attached to the unit, but the problem is the ones that come from cities.
Yeah,
that's the collection in the modifier is collection city trained units.
Yeah, I'm hearing is it sounds like there's a bug in city trained units, right?
Right.
Or at least
right.
In upgrading and city trained units, where the unit, you know, just kind of denounces its motherland every time it changes.
Right, and that's been in since vanilla. So that's why it would have been nice if they had extended the modifier attach to units.
Right, because then you could fix it that way.
Yeah, you could fix it that way. You could track which units have been trained where, and when they upgrade, fix it.
Yeah, the other thing that I'm thinking with that, too, is, sorry, to just kind of backtrack to when you were talking about promotions, although I know it's interesting because one of the things that I was planning on doing whenever I finally get around to finishing up the Blackfoot is actually have a unit tree where temporarily one of the steps in the unit path is to go to a different unit class. Now,
oh yeah, you're gonna lose all your promotions, I think.
Yeah, that's my fear. All of a sudden I'm realizing that maybe I'm gonna lose all my promotions, maybe the game's just gonna crash. I mean, we don't know what the DLL is gonna do if it's not prepared for that sort of a move.
I don't think it would crash. I think it would just say that promotion was only valid for recon units and you're not a recon unit anymore, so I think it's just gonna, well, it may attach the, I don't know, Rai.
Yeah,
you're trying to do something the game simply was not designed to handle.
Exactly. And the question,
yeah.
What does it do then?
Yeah, would it maintain just the level of experience? Like, would it clear out the promotions, but you still have, like, you know, 60 experience, so then all of a sudden you've got to choose all of your promotions again? Or, I don't know.
I don't know.
No,
I mean, this is one of the things I love about modding.
I haven't tried it, but my guess would be you would have one of two things. You would have a unit that has promotions that are wrong for it. It's got all those recon promotions, but it's now an archery unit. Or you would have an archery unit, for example, that used to be a recon, but now it has no promotions, but it's at level 6, so you have to get like 1,000 XP to be able to choose the first archery promotion.
Yeah, it's hard to say. Like, I don't know. What, and do you start again at the bottom, etc.? I mean, this is one of the things I love about modding, is you throw the game system a curveball and see what it does with it. Although sometimes what it does with it is horrible.
Yeah. Usually when I do that, I'm looking at my desktop when I didn't want to.
Yep.
Now, I actually experimented with the idea of on-off switches for modifiers, and I did it with cities. And it does work pretty well for things like yield modifiers. You know, I want to add a percentage yield of science, say, to this city, or I want to just add directly to science. So it will work pretty well for, if the conditions are right, add 2 science to this city. And then if the conditions later on are no longer right, take those 2 science away. And that all gets reflected properly in the city view in the UI, and the game actually implements it properly.
Because it's modifiers, yeah, right, exactly.
Right.
So as opposed to Civ 5, that's really great news, because I haven't played around with it yet. You know, if whenever you attach something with Lua in Civ 5, chances were very high, if it wasn't a promotion, that there would be no evidence that it existed, and you would have to find some ways of kind of...
Yeah, the UI in Civ 5 was weak in a sense that when you're looking at a city, it didn't show you a lot of things that you could adjust things directly via Lua commands, but like you say, it didn't reflect it anywhere in the city view. So it was hard to tell whether it was working, which is another reason why we always use dummy buildings, because then at least it showed up in the UI.
Right, yes, because especially it was yields, right? If you were, you were going to give, say, plus 10 religion per turn, if you weren't going to do it with a dummy building, you were going to get plus 10 faith appearing, but no indication to the player that it was or wasn't happening.
Right.
I can see what Lee was talking about being quite useful for those people who want the Civ to have the quality of being one thing if they're at war and another thing if they're at peace. You know, maybe adding two culture when at peace and maybe two production when they're at war or something of that nature.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Blackfoot, I mentioned that, comes to mind because that's one of the reasons that they've been stalled out for like a year has been just difficulties in getting there. They actually are supposed to have a different, you know, different profile at peace and a different profile at war. So, you know, now that we have the ability to do that with Lua, it just got way easier.
Any thoughts from Jan and the Crazy Scotsman on that?
Oh no, I haven't been too deep into de-attaching modifiers or anything with that again. So I'm happy as long as I can use what's there. Yeah, I think that issue of things not showing up on the UI and you have to, you know, be careful that players can trace what's happening, that's relevant pretty much for everyone, even like me when you scrap the surface.
Yeah.
I really do like the modifier system quite a lot because I am Lua challenged, and so the modifier system is quite nice in that I'm able to do a lot more than I would otherwise be able to. But I definitely agree about, you know, this missing information in the UI. I've particularly been a little frustrated with the information with units, which I guess is perhaps related to what Lee has been saying, but the fact that you can't see what modifiers are attached to a unit unless you're in that specific situation.
Yeah.
It's very frustrating not being able to see. He's like, did I move this guy next to Mount Everest? I don't know. You know, like, yeah, it'd be nice to have that information available.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Like, I think that modifiers should almost show up as promotion charms, just because in Civ 6, you're definitely going to be wanting to use modifiers instead of promotions. Promotions, of course, are more, you know, like, they're their separate thing. They're in that kind of talent tree, if you will, and that's what you choose when your characters level up, and that's how they work. There isn't really the idea of promotions outside of those, although some units can start with a specific promotion. But besides that, like, so modifiers just kind of go missing, and it does actually make, I think it affects your feelings of maybe units being bland, because there isn't really a visibility to say, oh, this unique unit, what's cool about it? Well, I don't know. It has the same promotions as the normal unit, right? I guess I have to go look in the Civilopedia to find out why how I should be using this, especially when you're learning. How should I be using an MP versus just a normal spearsman, right? But you know, you get my drift, right? So I wish there was a little bit more exposure of the modifier system, even if it was optional, right? Even if you had an optional ability to say, show this one, hide this one, it would be kind of nice to have.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And from a cosmetic view, this is not really related to the modifiers, but I would love for units to be named when they're created instead of when they get their first promotion. Just have an automatic name assignment.
I kind of like the idea that the regiment gets, you know, its own special title once it's become a hero, I guess. Because it's actually second promotion, I think. But I really liked, with Gathering Storm now, I really liked how rock bands, you know, you can't use them till you name them. I've contemplated building a different list like that and switching those rules over to the giant death robots. You can't use them till you've named them.
I like that idea.
Megatron!
That's right. And then just, you know, make sure that the list is just populated with names like Optimus and Maximus and you know, Mega or...
Yeah, well...
Man X.
Yeah. Well, there's a little segue there, isn't there? Because talking of rock bands, there's been a mod that does something or something. I don't know. Maybe somebody could tell me a bit more about that.
Sure. So this was like 2 days ago. I was having a conversation with one of the Steam admins, Sam PC, for the Civ 6 kind of Steam forums, and he was saying that he was getting a lot of complaints from people because new rock bands, which, by the way, I love rock bands. I think they're a great idea, but They're sort of this endgame unit that has almost nothing you can defend against. I mean, I think they're analogous to being kind of like the culture equivalent of the giant death robot. But, I mean, giant death robots, you can at least nuke them. You can shoot them. You can shoot them with other giant death robots. Rock bands just kind of all play nice with each other, and there's really nothing that can fight against them. So I was just kind of thinking, you know, what can we do to help? What can I think up to help? And I hit on an idea, which isn't a particularly original one, but the idea of letting religious units stop rock bands. And I thought that would be pretty simple. You just kind of give rock bands a religious strength, and then you also, I found that let them actually fight. So then I just gave them a the modifier that prevents them from attacking. So now they're just on the religious unit tree. So, I mean, the mod is really simple. It's about 4 lines of SQL code to just give them the modifiers that they need to behave more like religious units, and then just give them a religious strength. And they're a little bit stronger than apostles, although apostles get a whole bunch of different bonuses to their attack strength, and then they can overcome the strength of the rock band, right? So, now, I mean, really, realistically speaking, like, the game, the mod is so simple. It was mostly just me trying to figure out how to mod in Civ 6, because I haven't done anything really since vanilla. So, and things actually changed quite a bit between vanilla and now. That, or I just didn't know what I was doing back then. I put the religious tag on it. Realistically, it's not that great of a mod in the sense that what it does let you do as a strategy, because these are non-combat religious units now, is all you have to do is park a missionary on each of the places where you're afraid that a rock band might play, and now they're going to have to send apostles in to clear those out before they're going to be able to play a show. So, but just the flavor of rock and roll versus the church, if you will, kind of throw back to my 80s childhood, 80s, early 90s childhood, when rock and roll was evil and some churches were kind of opposed to it. You know, I thought that the kind of capturing that idea of this kind of xenophobic reaction to the new music into your game as sort of an optional defense against the rock band. And then what happened was that T-Pangle and generated up this really cringy flash where we had like 80s text over top of the Gathering Storm flash screen with kind of like a superimposed electric guitar image. And then so I ended up naming the mod after a like 80s Christian rock band song, To Hell with the Devil. And apparently it made enough of a splash that within 24 hours I got a ping from Kessler on Discord saying that PC Gamer magazine had thrown an article together about it.
That's really cool.
That flabbergasted me. I was actually on my lunch break. I came back to my desk and found that it was sitting there waiting for me, and I mostly just kind of spat my coffee out and laughed for a while. It hasn't necessarily impacted the viewership or downloadership of the mod. And there's actually like one really big problem with the mod. So this is going to be our every episode we have the sort of public service announcement that we still don't have expansion assets, and not having expansion assets sucks. Is that the rock band actually has a combat animation. So when you fight it, it actually does an animation, but that animation is terrible. It is the concert animation from when you play the rock band, right? And you say, hey, that's not that bad, except that it's actually the concert animation played 3 times in a row. So it's like 6 seconds long. You do the concert, and then they pack up, and then they unfold, and they do the concert, and then they pack up, and they unfold, and they do the concert. So I'm not really sure that you'd ever actually want to play this mod for real. It's mostly a joke, except that it does actually kind of solve the problem of rock bands not having anything that you can do with them. But you're going to want to turn on quick combat or something if you're going to play with this mod, because it is going to just take forever if you're like up against late game Eleanor and she's spamming rock bands and you're trying to fight back with your religion. I just can't see anyone wanting to fight 8 or 9 times in a single turn with the animation set there it is. And there's really nothing we can do, because without the asset exposure, I mean, the only other option I would have would be pray that somebody takes pity on me and builds a brand new rock and roll model and animates it so that it doesn't have that sort of effect, because there's like literally nothing we can do without those assets. So that's my rant. It's actually terrible.
I love the idea, though, of using religious units. Like, I've come across the discussion from a different angle before, like what to do outside around rock bands, and it was the question, why can't we buy them with gold? And so my idea was, they're basically, well, buying with gold, the developer said on one of the live streams, well, that's what the music industry wishes you could do. And then I thought, wait, so maybe because my childhood was 10 years later, the big deal was metal against hip-hop and whatever. So I thought, what if pop bands could be bought with gold? And they would be a defensive unit.
That would be
so
great.
What I was just thinking is maybe an easier way would be they simply occupy the tile. You buy them, maybe
They don't play music, but they just block things.
Yeah. They're pretty much like spamming out their music, occupying the charts, occupying the venues, whatever. And maybe like have a strategic resource or so that limits how many you can build. So you can't spam them and block tiles too easily, but you could block the high-profile tiles. You could block tiles near the border.
Right, right. The other thing that would be great with that is if you actually had some sort of, like, maybe even a randomized, but just, like, a huge money cost for keeping these pop bands going, right? Like, they just suck lots of money out, but they don't necessarily give you anything good in return, other than stopping the rock bands.
Well, they certainly wouldn't give tourism or album sales, because they have no cultural value.
The other one that I'm thinking of, I'm just going to throw this out there, is actually maybe trying to make a spy promotion for counter-spying against rock bands. So actually maybe make it so that counter-spying on Entertainment District, for example, or something, would reduce the effectiveness of rock bands. But what I want to try to do, if it's at all possible, although I think I'd have to just fake it and use Lua instead, is create a promotion for spies called Narcotics Unit. And what Narcotics Unit does is drastically increases the chance that a band breaks up if they play near the Narcotics Unit. What I really, really want to do, although I don't know that's possible, you can add more outcomes for rock bands. Rock bands have a rock band outcome, and you have the current 5 of them, but create an outcome for the Narcotics Unit, which is, you know, band incarcerated while playing overseas. And
band died from overdose.
What I really want to do is have it say that, you know, the band was locked up because they had a controlled substance, and then say the lead singer of the band claims that it was a plant by the man, because that would be what it was. You know, your spies would plant narcotics on them, and then they would get thrown in jail.
As if that were necessary.
As if that was necessary. That's right. I'm trying to be nice-ish. Dying from overdose is probably all.
No, wait.
Could just say it has encountered health issues and is unable to play.
Yeah.
What about rock bands going up against each other? Can you maybe mod that in? Have a sort of a battle of the bands?
Right. So that's actually a good thing you brought that up, because I was actually sort of planning. I've been planning back and forth, although I think I won't want to wait until either somebody takes pity on me. This is an advertisement. Somebody takes pity on me and gets me an animation that works, or Firaxis please opens the gates to the assets and lets us tamper with them ourselves. Because, I mean, that would be the obvious thing, would be just chop off the 2 other concerts and we'd be happy. Because I think that it would be too much of a pain in the arse. But I would really love to actually make it so that there was a variant of the mod for those people who want it that way, where the rock band can actually also initiate combat, and then rock bands can fight other rock bands.
Because
I don't think that right now, although I haven't tried to look at it because I think it would be crazy, I don't think that we can create another combat type. Because if you could create another combat type, then what would be the logical move would, and this is definitely what Jan said just now, is make a cultural combat, and that it's endgame only, it's rock bands versus rock bands, it's rock bands versus pop bands.
Well, in that case, pop band could just be a promotion or something like good at playing against other rock bands, right?
Right, yeah.
Perhaps the rock band, once it had 3 successful rock sing-offs or whatever you're going to call them, become rock gods. Maybe that could be it, you know?
Yeah, your Rolling Stones rock band defeats everyone else.
Yeah. Yep, make them kind of the nuke of rock bands.
And then the others just bow down and say, we're not worthy.
Although an issue I see is with kind of battling bands is prominence of geography. So it means that basically the battle plays out on the map, right? And distances matter, travel speed, and, you know, maybe in the movie it's kind of a thing where they get to the battle of the bands in the last second to be able to play on stage and everything comes down to it. But in the game, I think the issue would be, how do bands meet each other? And how do you sort of control this with the high movement speeds that are available in the late game and all that?
Yeah, I think you'd actually have to hunt them down, right? Like you'd be saying, oh no, I'm going to lose to Eleanor. I'm going to use my remaining faith to crank out you know, three rock bands and send them her way to hunt down her rock bands. But you're right, like, if they're going to go down a railroad and they're going to use their movement speed and they just go from her city that bought them to right into your entertainment district in one move and they fire themselves off, then what are you going to do? I guess you build the rock band first and you drop it on the entertainment district and you wait for them to come, right? The other thing that I didn't test, like I said, I made this mod in about 4 hours. What I didn't test was whether damaging a rock band makes it weaker at doing cultural things. I don't think it does, but it might. I just don't know. Is a half-health rock band weaker, like half the album sales or half the tourism? Because I don't know how much they map to the way religious units work.
Yeah, I haven't gotten to the late game yet in Gathering Storm. I'm still trundling along in the ancient era in the test game, you know, where I basically doing what you were doing, playing unmodded. Unfortunately, I suck at the game so much, I'm going to have a Dark Age, Classical Age, I think, because I haven't gotten enough historical moments.
Sure.
Obviously, Canis is going to have to just, you know, delete all that from the from the cast, but...
JNR then, so you're talking about what you might have done. Can you tell us a little bit more about the mods that you have actually created and what you've done so far?
Yeah, sure. So I started basically with just seeing on Reddit some very small stuff, and I wondered, why is that not a thing yet? So the first mods were basically very simple, like just one or two lines of code that were a little bit of an adjacency bonus for an Oasis to the commercial hub, right? So that Oasis would be trade hubs, and so that kind of got me into it. How does the interaction with the environment, the kind of the core of Gathering Storm, how would it feel more authentic without kind of going too much into simulation territory? And so what I've started focusing on now with Gathering Storm is the renewable energies and climate change. The first was pretty simple, which I saw, again, what a lot of people demanded, and it was a big deal during the reviews, was that when climate change comes up, you don't notice really that much, right? So some tiles get flooded, not too many, and yeah, that's it. And it stops before you're actually getting to the point where you could swap to renewable energies.
Okay.
And so I found the general value, and I think it was kind of a twist of fortune there that it was a simple value to adjust how much floods. So now we can just say all the flat coast land can be flooded. And so what I've been working since, which is not released yet, which will hopefully go up this weekend or even later today, is something that tweaks a little bit more values. So the carbon dioxide or the carbon emissions would ramp up slower, because right now the tree ends too soon, right? Or the climate stages end too soon. And if we make them more intense, we can also make them slower
without the intensity.
Without the intensity per stage kind of going down, right? So let's say we double the intensity, but we have, but we also double the requirements. So the number of turns it takes to reach a certain intensity stays the same. So I've kind of tweaked around with that a bit, tried to make it a bit more intense, make especially the strong disasters, storms like Category 5 hurricanes and such, more common as climate change increases, and bundle that together for kind of a more severe climate change version. Because I realized that's what I really need for the other thing that I did, which is making renewable energies more impactful. So you don't need really to bother with renewable energies if the climate change is tough. So that got me into that. And with renewable energies, the idea was to make them, again, interacting with the environment. So to speak, not vanilla, but default Gathering Storm, unmodded Gathering Storm has windmills. Okay, they have to go on hills. Solar farms have to go on flatland, offshore on coast, and geothermal on the geothermal fissure feature, right? That's it. So I added a little twist to that and gave each improvement some extra energy or some extra power generated for even better placements. Because in reality, the spots where some renewable energy stations are set up, right, they've become very valuable and the bids for them have become very high. They're part of political negotiations. Can we put a solar farm into the Sahara? How we link it up? The North Sea is full of wind farms where land is being cut up and so forth. So I added a few modifiers there that basically say wind farms get more power when they're next to coast, where there's more wind. Offshore wind farms get more power the more they're out there, and so on. And I also gave an incentive to increase your tech, so each improvement has a tech where it receives an additional power. And so that was version 1, and the version 2, which should also go up later today, which is basically done, it takes those that extra power from technology, from extra good placement, and it lets you convert that into a strategic resource with the help of a building. And that means you can transfer this energy across your empire. You can even trade it to other civilizations. And that's something I saw that has come up as a question. What can I do, or why can't I use the power from my solar farms in this desert city to power my core where there's no space left? And so I tried to tackle that issue and link it to that mod.
Wow.
Very good.
I like that idea.
I'm just digesting everything he just said he's done already, and I'm thinking maybe I should retire from Modcast and let him take my place. Man, that's
yeah. I'm amazed because I was the one that said to Rob, you know, we should have this guy on because I like the complexity mod. I see a lot of tweak mods on Steam that say, oh, I don't like how the developers made this thing, so I'm just going to get rid of it. And often it's, you know, I don't like rock bands. We're just going to make rock bands not a thing. But to see somebody who says, you know, I think it could use some more variation and more options, and then I think you've done it really well, with, especially with the resources, the power mods, right? To have these, okay, let's make them a little bit more fun than just you need power and it needs to not be coal and stop.
True, man. And so kind of another aspect was people ask, like, why can't we shut down our fossil power plants completely, right? Even nuclear produces some carbon dioxide, and the moment you run out of sustainable energy, it boots up again. And so the easiest way to distribute the renewable energy was actually to provide an alternative power plant, which unfortunately will not have a model, of course, since that's too far ahead for me right now. I'm happy I got an icon done for the resource because I had to. Yeah, so you can replace your power plant completely, and then it just consumes this renewable energy, and you don't have to, like, if you run out, your buildings will of course go unpowered, but you don't have to worry about them shutting down, or you don't have to worry about carbon dioxide anymore. And as opposed to decommissioning, you get to keep the production bonus, right? That's something that came up with the decommission mod I had, where you could decommission your power plants, that I did on request, but then I wondered, why would you do that? You're losing +3 production, and with the nuclear power, and even +3 science, which go to all cities within 6 tiles. So that's really just a very niche application. So I figured if we can make a green power plant, a completely green one, it can have those bonuses. And I also added 3 culture, because why not? It makes your people happy and your empire stable, and you progress socially. So I added those bonuses again, so you can kind of, you don't have to have this bad feeling about shutting down the power plants from a gameplay perspective.
I actually kind of like the conundrum, you know, the dilemma that it puts you in. If you had to say, so here I have a choice. Do I try to salvage the environment, or do I keep my production? Because it will come at a crazy cost, right? You have this sort of debate often today. So I kind of like the fact that it gives you that dilemma. Because if you shut down all your power plants and you remove them all, you're going to literally find yourself, at least temporarily, back in the previous era.
The problem is that I like the dilemma if it were there, but right now, once your city is powered with enough renewable energy, you do not have to decommission the old ones, right? Because once they consume, they only consume the resources if they have to produce power. And if they don't produce resources, they don't produce carbon dioxide, and you just have this idle power plant, which is giving you the production bonus, the science bonus in case of the nuclear one, and so on. So that's kind of the decommissioning that you're doing. So actually decommissioning the building, like the object of the building, and dismantling it and getting rid of it, is only necessary in very niche situations. And even then, I don't know if it's that useful. So yeah, I decided in the end to just replace it and have an upgrade, which of course follows the cost progression of the building. So it will not be that easy to build. I think Germany right now is thinking about, you know, using this big battery storages that Tesla is putting up to kind of store the renewable energy when it's produced next to the facilities, and then transfer it at night and then store it somewhere else so it's ready on demand. And these kind of stations can cost in the dozens of billions of euros.
Right.
So I figured that those costs are actually not that unrealistic, and I think the cost progression should ensure that you still have to think about when do you make the change.
Or if. you might say, well, I'm getting all these environmental things, but I'm so close to going into space, what do I care?
Yeah. Or if you... Or
from, if a gameplay, from a gameplay perspective, I'm not talking about real life.
Right, or if you're just going super wide and all your cities have enough space to put up a local power plant, you don't need to transfer either.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that I think that has been kind of this controversy, too, is the game has seven phases of global warming. When you get into the seventh phase of global warming, the multi-cluster tornadoes, hurricanes, droughts that are popping up everywhere, then there's really almost no incentive. Then you're like, oh, okay, I'm surviving at this point, so why don't I just see if I can sink everybody else into oblivion by putting more and more and more coal into the game, and there's no real reason to go forward. Now, at that point, you can argue that, you know, you're a bad person, at least in the game. I'm kind of surprised that there hasn't been, like, this eighth destruction of the universe mode that anyone has put on Steam Workshop yet, but I'm kind of waiting to see it come, where maybe, like, you breach the ozone or something, and suddenly, like, everything is a drought or something.
But it would still have the same kind of gameplay dynamics to it, right? You see how far can I handle it, and everybody else. Every other civ is just breaking or falling apart as well, just like I am. So I think more punishing thing would be to have something that's more in the spirit of pollution. You're not just having this global things, but very local effect.
Right, primarily. Right. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
It will hurt the globe, but it will also hurt you. Your coal power plants are going to make your people sick.
I feel like there's actually already a system in place that could account for that. With amenities and housing and appeal, you could kind of do a combination of all of those. Like in a city that has a coal power plant, that could reduce the appeal of all the tiles in the city by, like, you know, one or two, as well as having the further you go through the tech tree and as more renewable sources become available, that could also eventually have an amenity hit. I feel like there are definitely ways that you could make that happen with the current system, just with some slight tweaks that might be worth exploring.
I think those systems are enough, because something else with Gathering Storm is just that it adds more and more systems, right? And we're hitting a point where more is really critical. Like, I already don't like that we have, what now, three diplomatic currencies, or four if you count the victory points,
with
favor, influence, and grievances, and whatever, and let me just buy envoys with favor instead of having this point turn up. That would have been my solution, to keep kind of the number of systems low. So, yeah, I think everything that revolves around your citizen well-being, there are three systems, as you said, appeal, amenities, housing, and whatever happens has to be done with those.
Everybody crack open the plague, the Black Death scenario, and let's see what we can find in there. Because I feel like you're right. If there should be this sort of concept that says, if you are producing, I don't know, a thousand tons of carbon in one city, that city should be a plague or have a plague or something.
I mean, it could just be a city-wide drop of appeal, right? So around the industrial zone, it doesn't make any that much sense, because you're already getting low appeal there. You're gonna have mines which drop the appeal further. That's not where you care about appeal anyway. But if you do it citywide, all your neighborhoods will be affected, your national parks, because, you know, the dirty air, it's going around, and it's like the coal dust or the micro dust is settling on walls in your city, and it's darkening them, and coal power is being burned all over the place. So that would be something, but it would be very extreme, I think.
You could also attach a modifier to the city that if you've got 1,000 units of yuck per turn in the city, then your city food production drops by 20%. City starts to starve because as a reflection of the bad health.
Right. Or growth, even. Although, I mean, late game growth is not necessarily, like, it really depends. Sometimes you don't want growth. Sometimes you do want growth. I mean, generally you want growth, but sometimes you want to not.
But if your food yield number is decreased significantly enough, your city will start to shrink in size, and then it can't work all those tiles. It loses production. It loses whatever else it's your specialists. They're not contributing whatever they would have contributed, whether it's culture or science based on which district they're in. Because if they start dying off because they're starving, as a way to implement this city is a really crappy place to live.
I think a variant of drought, too, would be nice. Like, if you could actually just have it be sort of random, but, like, the drought kind of effect, but instead of it being focused on clear-cut, non-featured tiles, you focus it on high carbon-producing tiles.
Kind of an acid rainstorm.
I would imagine, at least, that if your cities are overcast with smog, that it's not so great for growing either, right? That sort of an idea, which would combine kind of.
Yeah, you could attach a modifier that's city plot yields adjust plot yield food minus one across the board.
Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. I think that what I would do in that case was, yeah, I would do the food yield, because it's gotta hurt.
Yeah.
Low appeal just means that you suck at culture.
Well, you suck at gaining new citizens, I think. I think all that really does is slow down your gain of citizens.
I think I understand what you mean, though, that it doesn't affect your science or military game in any way.
Right. So if you're just building a huge army and nuking people, then you also don't care that your appeal sucks, because appeal is not tied to your ability to play that kind of a game, right? If you're Eleanor and you're trying to win culture victories, then...
So it would probably have to be tied to amenities somehow, which are something that hurts everyone.
Yeah.
Well, food matters too, right? Because that hurts people. All of a sudden, if you are trying to scramble to keep your people alive, some sort of a population loss mechanic is a good one.
I personally think that there should be a much higher loyalty penalty for having a starving city. In fact, I've personally bumped it up to something like minus 20 loyalty if your city is starving. Mm. But I think that could play in very nicely, because right now the default's just like minus 4. Something so small that it never actually impacts you. But I feel like all these systems could kind of interplay together, where if you have a super high pollution city, well, it reduces your growth, your people start starving, the city becomes in danger of revolting against you. Like, there's all sorts of things that could kind of be done with the current systems to just make it something that's important, not only for people going for like a culture victory, but somebody who's just pumping out tons of military and not caring about pollution will eventually have to care about it because their cities would revolt against them. I think that's something that could be done. It would be very interesting.
What I'd like to have with the natural disasters bit is sorry if this has become irrelevant, but I've tried to get a word in.
Sorry.
What I'd like to see with natural disasters is it have a positive religious effect in the early game.
Oh, totally.
It kind of weans out after you've got into sort of the Renaissance era. So in the very ancient age, it's fairly strong sort of religious thing, because you're just trying to build up your pantheon at that stage. And as it goes into classical, it's still there, but not quite as much. Through to medieval, where again, it's still there, not quite as much as classical. And then Renaissance, it started to really drop off. People started to understand the science behind it.
I've been saying that for a while, that when your people get hit, like when within the first turn, 10 turns, you have a volcano erupt within your city, that should really make your people think about what's up there.
Yeah.
And what's drawing things. I think it would be a good counter effect to the damages as well, that early, that you say, okay, if you actually get hit by a disaster early, you get just a flat faith boost that can help you get a pantheon up.
Or even gives you a bonus pantheon. If you build your city next to a volcano, then that has to become your pantheon. That volcano is sort of a pantheon thing, but you can choose a pantheon as well, so you get like a bonus sort of religious effect to your religion based on the volcano god.
You could do that through the player attached modifier thing.
My word, I wonder who's been messing
because
with that.
Basically all the pantheons and beliefs do is attach modifiers. So
yeah, okay,
player modifier attach. If you get a volcano goes kaboom when you're near your capital city within the first X turns of the game, attach a modifier that's you're the volcano worshippers and you get something or other.
Yeah, so what I want to see here, because this would be doable actually now, I'm pretty sure. What I want to see is that there's another category of belief, but it's not accessible by apostles, and it's nature belief. And then what you have is it triggers in its own kind of custom UI, and it comes in kind of two or three forms. Four forms. Here we go. You have either sea god if you get hit by a hurricane, fire gods if you get hit by a volcano. You could also have a sea god or maybe a fertility god if you get hit by a flood, but it could also be a sea god.
A rain god.
A rain god, there you go. And then you could have sun god if you get drought. And whichever one of those hits you first, if you're still in the ancient era, you get to choose from the list of fire gods or sun god effects. And that would be your compensation for getting clobbered in the early game. But I think it should only really give you that if it actually kills populations.
It could be balanced by giving you a bonus that only really takes effect next to a disaster. So let's say the volcano gods give you, or the fire gods give you bonuses to volcanic soil and settle on doom. Like adjacency bonuses for this, adjacency bonuses for districts next to volcanoes. I mean, that would be like a high risk, high reward situation.
Yeah, so if you put your holy site next to the volcano, you get like extra 20 faith a turn.
But I think nowadays, I mean, with the ability to trigger custom UIs easily, I hear. UIs scare the pants off of me, so I'm not sure about that. But build a customized UI, now you can attach modifiers using Lua, which would come from those UIs, and the ability to kind of trigger, I'm hoping at least, Lee, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm hoping there's some sort of an event that triggers when a disaster hits in the Lua code.
I don't know yet.
But there must be, because if you get a disaster that counts, you get the video.
Yeah, and you get the event, don't you, as well, if you clean up after a disaster. So there must be something recorded somewhere about that.
Yeah, but I don't know whether there's a specific Lua hook or not. Yeah.
Right. Well, then the hook problem would be...
It might actually just be entirely handled at DLL level, because they can do it that way, too.
So the other question, of course, is going to be that gameplay versus UI. Now, I mean, to me, it's okay if what you end up doing is catching the gameplay, a UI script, and then leaving some sort of a marker to say, on your next turn, after you survive the volcano exploding, your high tells you about the god, you know, Maui. I mean, I went there. No,
actually, all those custom scenario pop-ups and all that are all being done directly from gameplay.
Oh, excellent. Well, that makes it easier, because then you don't have to worry about the split.
None of them are true UI, so clickable feedback would be a problem.
Oh, I see. I don't know enough about the stuff.
Like the Nubian scenario when somebody or other arrives, I can't remember which it is, that's all coming directly from gameplay. It's not actually a true UI. They created what they call a pop-up event.
Right.
And all you really do is click, okay, I saw this, and then it dismisses the pop-up. There's no actual input back into the game from what you click on that. So I don't know whether...
Although that could still work, Lee. That could still work in a sense for the things that I was talking about, because you could be informed that you have.
Yeah, and then we just have to figure out how to get custom artwork to get into that pop-up. I think it's all in the text files and blip files and art diff files to get that to work.
Calling today, in North America the number is 301-637-7659. That's 301-637-POLY. In Europe, 44121-288-7659. That's 44121-288-POLY.
The only thing worse than being talked about is not being talked about.
You can Skype us at the Polycast or email us at thepolycast@gmail.com. For more information on Modcast, our sibling shows Polycast, Revcast, Civcast and Turncast, or about Polycast in general, log on to the series' official website at thepolycast.net.
Civilization 4, 5, Beyond Earth, and 6 sound clips copyright Take-Two Interactive. Copyright The Polycast at thepolycast.net.